The following podcast contains adult language, explicit content, and original opinions.
All content is the opinion of Comics Brew and no one else.
It is meant for mature audiences only, so be warned.
Christmas, we wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. And Tyler sucks butts.
It's true. A little known fact.
Depends on the butt.
That is actually the original version of the song. Yes, yeah. But they rewrote it because some stupid holiday that nobody pays attention to called New Year's. But I don't know who gives a fuck about that. It's just another year.
We switched from Chinese New Year to American New Year.
Tyler's the sign of the January zodiac. It's just his butt. Uh-huh. Well, from all of us here at Comics Brew, we wish you a Merry Christmas, a Happy Holidays, and really, really hope you enjoyed that time off you got from your employer. Now back to work.
Yep, back to work, slave.
Merry Christmas.
Welcome back to Comics Brew, last show of the year. What number is this?
This is the number 238, the 238. Fifth annual Bruisies. Glad you could join us, Adam.
Yeah, I'm full of energy.
Full of piss and vinegar and vim and vigor.
Vim, vigor!
Yes.
Well, we have a very special episode.
It is. It is our holiday episode where we decide to tell you what comics were best in our minds this year.
And this is
shitty
the
holiday
official
special.
Greatest.
Why are
most
you in
popular.
Such a shit mood? Is it just because you're sitting next to him? Or?
No. Well, I mean, partially. I got to drink wine. Fucking hate wine.
So we should get off. We should start off the bat with that. Comic wine will be the way we go tonight. It is a classiest of affairs. And I actually happened to grab like a nice red wine Merlot. It's really good.
Yeah, real classy. I grabbed mead.
I didn't pay for it.
I paid for mine.
Steal it?
No. I used that awesome bonus I got from work.
Mm. Huh.
So like I took my time and shit. I was like, yeah.
Nice.
This is not a cheap bottle of wine.
I pretty much asked the person Total Wine, hey, you got a mead section?
Oh, yeah. They
and
do.
And then they took me there and I was like, all right, that sounds good. So I'm drinking a...
Where'd you go?
Total Wine.
No, like which one? Federer Way or Tukwila?
The one in Tukwila.
I know exactly which aisle you went to.
Yeah. So I got a Hidden Legend maple mead.
It was in the vegan section or whatever, the gluten-free section.
It's weird, isn't it? I missed it the first time because of that, because it's behind a lot of the beers, too.
Adam's dying over here.
What? Carry on.
I don't know if this technically counts as wine, but it's honey wine.
It's honey wine, yeah. It's totally a dessert wine.
This is a maple tinged mead, and it's really good.
It looks great. I did try it. It's good, too. It's a little sweet.
It's pretty sweet. It's a little syrupy, but not as bad as I was worried it was going to be.
What I like about mine is mine's a little bit tart. It's a little bitter. It's got a body.
Mine, so I am drinking a mead as well, because Tyler got it for me, because I didn't have time to go to the store, the booze store.
And we probably couldn't trust him to actually get wine.
I fucking reminded you. You had completely forgotten we're just going to bring beer.
Do you want to start down?
Yeah, I know, it's rough life.
Do you want to start to where the reminders began? Or?
Called out.
No, I don't.
No? Okay, cool. You did. That was all you,
buddy. We are talking about today. So I am drinking a Ruby Sunset honey strawberry mead with natural flavors.
And a ton of salt.
Yeah. It's pretty thick with salt inside of it. I'm not a big fan of wine. Especially, hence the salt. And it's my least favorite part of Christmas, I'm not going to lie.
I'm loving this.
But yeah, it's sweet, and I don't know, people drink this for enjoyment, I don't get it, but...
Adam, you've got like two levels of grumpy. One of them is awesome to be around, one of them isn't. This is the fun grumpy
drag.
Adam.
Yeah, well, I'm
trying to be classy and upbeat.
That's
and
right.
Like, I hate wine.
I fucking do, dude.
I brought him a glass and he's drinking it out of the bottle.
Yeah. You said classy. It comes in a glass.
No.
Not my fault. What, Tyler, what is this called? What
it's
is called, this made
it's
out of?
A bottle.
Yeah. Which, oh, you know, just like a glass, is made of glass, holds liquids,
yeah,
and has an opening around the top.
The glass is the shape.
Hey, so that the crack
shape,
pipe, is that just glass?
It's glass in
yeah,
a glass.
It's a glass
gun.
For crack.
You're using the, like, I think you're using
he's
the adjective. Yeah.
I am. Also, there's gross buildup of liquids around the rim.
Oh, maybe you should put it in a glass.
Maybe. You should not get me rotten liquor. Look at the mold.
What mold?
Look at it right there at the rim. Look at it.
It looks like wax leavings.
And it's not wax leavings. It's all red. Might be rust. We can get tetanus. Thank you.
You are welcome. That's my gift to you.
Oh, Merry Christmas.
I am fucking trying not to die laughing over here.
As I was trying to say earlier, this is a very prestigious, very official, greatest comic book awards ever handed out by anyone ever. This is the 50-year running. We've done it. And I'm glad that everybody listening tuned in to hear all the real awards from us, you know?
I tried to get, so you know who's in town. Jeremy Houck's in town.
Yeah.
And I tried to get
Santa?
Him back here.
Oh, wait, he's just coming.
He's coming to town.
Yeah, okay.
I tried to get him back here, and he goes, no, but I'll read Dark Knights 4 and think of you guys. I was like, yeah, you will.
There you go.
So let's start there. Before we get into the bruisies, we got to get some house cleaning out of the way. Dark Knights Metal number 4 came out this week.
Yes, this is the only review we're doing.
Yeah, because we promised, and we far be it from us to let you down. So the cover's dope. It's got Daniel, the multiverse.
Yeah, the regular cover, the metal embossed, mm-hmm. like, shiny one. There's a couple others, but yeah.
Yeah, there's Batman beating down some zombie Superman.
Which doesn't happen.
Wonder Woman fighting Ra's al Ghul.
Which doesn't make any fucking sense.
Yeah, I know. But whatever. I really dug this issue, and I think this series continues to nail it.
Yeah, it continues to be rad as fuck.
So, it's got two more issues left in the main event, and we worry about the same thing every time. Scott Snyder, stick the landing.
Can he? We won't know till issue 6.
Right.
But we can say that issue 4 continues to be one hell of a ride. And
another problem I got with wine, there's only like 2 glasses in a bottle.
Well, normally a glass is actually supposed to be poured less than the entire glass.
Yeah.
Pointless glass. Waste of space.
It's actually half full.
You're about to get this thrown.
Then you can explain to
Tomahawk
Adam why
style.
None of this shit works anymore.
Josh was getting fucking lippy. He'll understand.
He'll be like, what do you mean? It happens every day.
I finally snapped.
So Dark Knight's Metal. We open up on Batman just asking the universe, please no more. Please don't hurt me anymore. And then these 2 nightmare versions of Superman show up. One in Luther armor, or 3. One in Luther armor, one in Batman's, his Dark Knight Returns armor?
Yeah.
And then one that's the
like
blue
a variant
the
of
blue
it.
Superman.
Yeah. Electric Superman from the 90s.
Yeah. I love how that's a nightmare Superman, because it was such a terrible
series. Yeah, I did like that little touch. I thought that was super funny.
Because there's Superman's nightmares show up, and Batman's like hell, it's my end, and he has an infinity gauntlet?
He's got everything from his imagination.
Yeah.
It's he calls it the 5-finger death punch.
Right, which is a fucking metal band.
It is. And they do a great cover of Bad Company.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, they do.
But yeah, so Batman starts using basically the power of this dark multiverse just to create anything from anybody's imagination.
Yeah. And he creates
the Superman.
Every color of kryptonite, I think he says.
Yeah. I like how I was like, one makes you sparkle.
I've got gold to periwinkle.
Yeah. Which means he's got the one in there that turns Superman into a homosexual.
Yep. And so they all come after him, and they're like, Bruce is like giving a last-ditch effort, and he's just ripped away real quick. Like, Bruce is ripped out of reality. And I really dig that.
He does call out to somebody.
Yeah. He calls out to Daniel.
If you remember, that was the end of issue 1 or 2.
Yeah, 1. No, it was... Shit, was it in the prelude? Or was it?
No, it wasn't in the prelude.
Oh, then
it was
the first issue. It was the first issue then.
Yeah, Daniel, the current Sandman, told him, hey, you know, call to me when you're in the darkest place.
The darkest of needs, or something like that, yeah. Then we cut to Wonder Woman and Kendra Saunders and Dr. Fate chopping their way through to the Rock of Eternity.
Chop, chop, chop. We see all the teams that are that got sent out to go find pieces of the Nth metal.
Atlantis's depths are being plumbed by Deathstroke and Aquaman, and then Green Lantern goes to Thanagar.
Which is probably the best sequence ever, just because, I mean, we get to see a character we haven't seen in a while, and his dialogue is so fucking perfect.
And you mean Starro.
I mean Starro.
Yeah, Starro's great. Also, like the little editorial note in here where Scott and Greg are just like metal.
Super funny.
I was just like, whatever, man. Why? Like, where's this coming from? Just because it is. It's just happening. That's just what's going on. And then we cut back to Daniel and Superman and Batman, and this is probably the meat of the story, and I find it incredible. Adam, wake up. And
I am awake, motherfucker.
Your eyes are closed and your breathing changed.
It's called resting.
Okay. Part of this sequence that I will say I fucking loved is a new addition to the DC kind of creation mythos. Like, they've got, it goes all the way back to the beginning, there's matter and antimatter, and the monitors, the brothers set the monitor, the monitor and the anti-monitor. But then there's a third being residing at the World Forge, in a deep in a roiling cauldron of possibility you call the Dark Multiverse. And basically this being would just hammer out possibilities.
Yeah, for eons it hammered out universes from the hopes and fears of all living beings. The most stable worlds rose into the orrery, which we know is the multiverse.
Hey, stop. Hammer time.
And then for the twisted, unstable worlds, the Forger had a great dragon to destroy them and return their energies to the Forge. And then they reason, oh, the great dragon was Barbados.
Yeah.
Yep. But instead of doing his job, Barbados took the worlds and allowed them to fester. Yeah. Allowed these mistakes to grow and take root. And then he became dominion over them. He got dominion over those worlds, and then now he's reshaped. He's trying to reshape history, essentially.
Yeah, he's trying to just create his own and drag everything down.
Yep.
So, serious question. What's up with his hard-on for Batman?
Basically,
other than like the whole Bruce Wayne going back in time,
that's it.
It's okay. I didn't know if there's anything more to it than
it's. Yeah, Bruce Wayne saw him. He discovered the truth early.
Yeah, right. I just didn't know if there was anything more to it than that because I hadn't read anything recently. So
no, that's really it. Like, Batman went back through time, and Barbados saw him, and was like, "Well, there we go.
There's my end.
I'm gonna use that dude." I'm going to use this determined motherfucker who fought his way through time and set a trap for him, and he'll let me out. And it worked.
So, I mean, from there, Daniel gives them a choice. He also describes that where they're in Lucian's library.
Which was a cool touch.
The home of stories that are never told and stuff from Sandman, which is, so Snyder's been really good about paying homage to pretty much every part of Batman's history.
Uh-huh.
Or at least the bigger Grant Morrison-style history of Batman. This is a nice touch because he's hitting on, like, old DC lore. Or DC lore that's, like, extended universe style. Or
he's bringing in a lot of stuff.
Yeah, like, the fact that Sandman and the Endless are basically, like, the overlords of this fucking DC world. And, like, he doesn't even touch on Watchmen at all because there's their own separate thing going on, but... I got this feeling that the Endless are even above them. You know what I mean? Because of the Endless.
That is kind of how the Endless work. They were before and they're above the gods.
Yeah.
But I like how they're occasionally used, especially Dream.
Death from, like, time to time, but not as often as she used to be.
Yeah. And,
which is kind of surprising.
They're supposed to be just these personifications of ideas.
Yeah.
And they don't interact or interfere. So that's why you so rarely see them, but they're still there. They're still part of the DC universe.
And the only one that's done it more often than anyone is Dream, is Morpheus. But
yeah, well, I mean Death, but...
Well, but yeah, but I mean, she sees everyone she kills, right? But it's more like he intervenes on the living, you know, more than that.
Every night, during the sleepy times.
Yeah, because they have the biggest influence on his realm as well.
It's true. It's a back and forth, right? But I love that they included him in this, and then you know how Bruce and Superman get out of the situation they're in. Like, they have to step through a door, but by doing so they have to grasp onto something that they love. Superman is no problem. It's like my life,
everything.
Yeah, I'm motherfucking Superman.
And then Batman, like, Bruce is like, I think I'm stuck here, dude. And then he's like, wait, is there nothing? And he goes, my family. Yeah. Damien. And then...
Yeah, my little shit of a son that wants to kill people all the time.
Yeah, he says, maybe I'm a failure, but nothing I find down here will change how I feel about my family. I was like, man, that's a fucking tear-jerking way to describe things. And then we cut back to Kendra, and we find out that she's, like, she did a deal with, like, the immortals of the world in D.C., and she basically becomes Lady Blackhawk, which I think is a creation for this comic. And then, what else do we find out? We find out that at the Great Cosmic Center, the Forge of Worlds, which is where Batman and Superman sent themselves, they find out what happened to Carter Hall.
Yes.
And that's metal.
It's metal as fuck. Yeah. It's hella rad.
But like we said, let's see if he sticks the landing. Let's get into the bruisies, gents.
Bruisies.
Wake up, Adam.
I am motherfucking awake.
Let's start off right where we always start off, and we'll do best writer. So what's going to happen is, unless there's a clear winner already determined by our nominations, Tyler, Adam, and I are going to argue out who deserves best writer in, or best of any of these categories. Not argue, but discuss.
Yeah.
So I guess I'll start off. My nomination for best writer was Tom King. The reason I did that is for three reasons. The War of Jokes and Riddles was great this year. The most recent two-parter, the Super Friends that Batman and Superman recently had, and then also Batman Elmer Fudd. That crossover was fucking dope. Each one of these, so with the Super Friends thing, I think he nailed the relationship between Bruce Wayne and Clark Kent, probably to a T. And then, you know, you get to see this best friend blossoming relationship with Selina and Lois. With the War of Jokes and Riddles, he essentially switched Riddler and Joker's personalities. Joker didn't find anything funny when he was speaking in riddles, and the Riddler was telling jokes.
Oh.
But they split Gotham. And it's all told in flashback after Batman proposes to Selina. And then, yeah, Batman Elmer Fudd. It was told from Elmer Fudd's perspective as he's a contract killer, and Batman tries to stop him on one of his kills. And Tom King writes in different noir versions of every other Looney Tunes character. There's a Porky owns a bar. Bugs is one of the main patrons. All of the, like, you Simbi Sam, Foghorn Leghorn, they're all there and shit. They all speak in their own cadences and stuff like they did in the cartoons. I think he nailed that in the Batman world, and I thought it was a really good job. So he gets my best writer.
I nominated John Allison, didn't I?
Yeah, for Giant Days.
Giant Days. I mean, I basically already said it last week, but he somehow managed to make the daily lives of three university girls just the most enthralling thing I've ever read.
Do you want me to let you know who you nominated, Adam?
I was going to pull up all the nominations from the last episode that we had in the notes. Give me a mouse.
But you got Ken Christensen for The Punisher episode 10, The Virtue of the Vicious.
Yeah, because that's that sweet, sweet hotel room. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, to be honest, I couldn't really come up with anything.
Well, so that might be a no. Yeah, that one's not winning.
So
I mean, like, we can all agree that dude wrote an amazing episode.
That
of
episode
the Punisher,
is probably one of the better episodes
but
of The Punisher.
It is not a comic book. It is a show.
Yeah, but I still think as long as it's comics related, it's within the realm, yeah. So then, gents, how do we determine who wins?
Let's throw everybody a curveball and give it to me.
No, what did you write this year? So Batman writer or independent comic writer, John Allison.
Ooh.
Is about a college life, right, Tyler?
That's Giant Days.
Yeah, it's about three girls at college. Just their daily life.
It's fantastic, like slice
of
life
stuff.
You
and your fucking stories, Tyler.
I'm just talking shit because I've been watching Riverdale and it's rad.
Tyler, you're not just watching Riverdale.
You're living it.
You know, he sent me messages last night like he wanted to gossip about the show while he was watching.
Yeah, I don't want
to
gossip about it. I just want to be like, this shit's fucking rad.
Do you remember the next sentence that you sent me?
I told you something that happened that was crazy.
I'm going to read it to everybody. I'm going to go with the Batman writer, but I'm going to read to you guys what Tyler thought was crazy about his stories.
So that's Tom King.
I mean, we'll say this is without context because I only sent him one sentence and he was just nonplussed by the whole thing. There's much more around the show.
So Tom King, he used to be a CIA agent and now he's a comic book writer.
Yeah. I remember that being a thing when he first started writing. He was writing Outsiders, I think?
I don't remember what
he was
writing
for.
He
was writing Nightwing.
He wrote fucking Vision for Marvel.
No, I mean at DC, when he started writing DC.
Oh, yeah, I don't remember what
he
was
writing
something
on. With Checkmate and Nightwing, I think.
Okay, I could see that. Like taking over after Kyle Higgins on the
New
52?
I think so. That was...
This is what you messaged me. Veronica's mom is making out with Archie's dad.
Yeah.
I love this shit.
Because there's so much else going on around it. Ah! There was drama and intrigue, and there's some political wheeling and dealing going on in the background there. Mm. The show's great. Anyways,
so he actually, he started with Sheriff of Babylon, but then, yeah, Nightwing Volume 3, Number 30, Setting Sun.
Yep.
And then, yeah, he had Teen Titans. He had, like, one. And then, yeah, he had some stuff with Darkseid War. And then eventually Sheriff of Babylon is still going on. And now he's Batman, Mr. Miracle, Vision, Commandy Challenge, all that shit. But he is DC exclusive, which is pretty cool, too. Best artist. So let's see here. Best artist last week, I said Sean Murphy for Batman White Knight. Sean Murphy, he's the guy behind Tokyo Ghost. He drew the Wake with Scott Snyder 2 years ago. But on Batman White Knight, he's doing this thing where he's adding his own style to it, obviously, just like Frank Miller did for his stuff.
Yeah, I mean, but it's very Sean Murphy-y art. If you've seen anything by him, it's his style.
Yeah, and to see Joker not, like, drawn not as a maniac, but as, like, a calculated, composed, fucking, basically businessman, it's really cool to see. Also, that first issue where he has that one-pager of the homage to Batman and Joker's cell, where it's just all that Batman stuff from across the eras of Batman's life, and it's Joker cowering in the corner because he's enraptured by this stuff. I just fucking loved it, so that's why I chose Sean Murphy.
I went with Jeremy Opeña for 7 to Eternity.
Now, he said this when he pitched the idea, is like, this is like my Mobius.
Yeah, no, I can totally see that, because he is getting the chance to go just buck wild. Like, everything in this book is ridiculous and gorgeous. There's, I want to say, like, 4 or 5 main races on this planet. Each of them are just weird and distinct and totally unique. There's not, like, the green people, like, you know, just green-skinned people. All of them, like, have these totally weird defining characteristics. But then every single person's power is different. So everything is drawn completely differently. Like, the main character's son has this ability where he can shoot, like, call up spirits. The main character actually can shoot, like, ghosts, basically, out of his gun. Like, using bullets that have, like, spirits souls in them. Like, souls in them. And so every time he draws that, they're these crazy, wispy, colorful things. He's gone from, like, crazy, just sentient muck-ridden swamps that try to swallow people in to weird desert towns that are just barren or cities just filled with life. Like, he has been drawing fucking everything. This book is just unbelievable to look at.
Is he doing colors too?
Matt Hollingsworth is doing the colors.
Okay, gotcha. But it's
like his art is what he's doing. I mean, he's doing the lines and basically he's doing the lines, but he's drawing this craziest shit.
Okay, cool. I've seen some of that shit. Even his covers, like his covers are dope too.
They all look like the way that the credits posters, are right? Yeah, they look like movie posters.
Yeah, yeah. I really do dig his work too. And then Adam, you've got do you have him up there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Riley Rosmo. Thank you. Yes, man, that's hard. I'm fucking going blind. For The Batman Who Laughs, because I thought that comic was drawn pretty damn well.
You see, like, as the comic progresses, you can kind of see
thank you.
You can see it go from ordered and structured Batman stuff to into the Joker.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But then into this Hellraiser Joker that's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? Liked it. Do you remember that opening two-pager where Joker's got, like, I'd have to show you, but it's where the credited page is, and Joker's got different panels where he's got Batman tied up, and he's got, like, and it's a reveal of the line around the block of families where he's going to kill the parents and then have the kid there. And it's what causes Batman to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
That's just, it's so well done. So well done.
It really is.
So I'm torn on this one. I could go for either, any one of these guys.
Roll a D6.
Jeremy, I do have a D6, actually. Okay, so Adam's idea of rolling a D6. All right, so 1 and 2 on the D6 will be Sean Murphy, 3, 4 will be Jeremy Opinia, and then 5 and 6 will be Riley Rossmo.
Yeah. I'm going to argue if it ends up being Riley Rossmo, because Adam didn't even read that comic.
I looked at it, and art is for your eyeballs.
Sean Murphy it is.
I can live with Sean Murphy.
Yeah, I'm down with that. I rolled a 2, so we'll go with Sean Murphy for best artist. Do you guys want to throw in a beer category?
Sure.
Let's see here. So we do individual beer awards because those are all so subjective.
Yeah, like I can't say that Tyler's mocha infused imperial oak aged maple stout was the best.
We would never settle on anything there. So let's go with just best new brew.
Sure, this best new brew.
Something that we had for the first time this year.
This year.
Well, I had thought that I had had my first Huckleberry Pucker this year, like my own. I had tried your guys's, but after we started talking about the Goose to Creme, Josh, and I've been thinking about it, I might be wrong on that. But either way, I'm still going to give it to it. I didn't think
to
I'd
what?
Like Huckleberry Pucker?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think he said Goose to Crema, but he said...
No. Huckleberry Pucker's your new
he
brew.
He said Huckleberry Pucker the first time, but he meant Goose to Crema.
No,
because
neither
we
of
had
you listened at all to what I said.
I did, too.
I didn't.
All right, you definitely didn't. You might have. I don't remember if Huckleberry was this year or not, but I'm going to give it to it anyways because I didn't think I'd like a sour beer at all, and that shit's actually really good.
Pixie stick in a bottle.
It's exactly what it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'd like to think I tried a little bit of new brews this year, but one of my favorites that I got this year was definitely the Rogue Cold Brew IPA.
That was good.
That was like an espresso in a bottle, man. That stuff was dope, so I went with that.
So I picked my beers based on what kind they are, but also their logo and name. So
indeed,
I had to take,
you do.
I had to take that all into account. My best new brew for the year is from Everybody's Brewing Company, Uncle Stepdad's Bourbon Barrel Aged Stout. Because that name was just so goddamn good.
That
and
shit
it was a
funny.
Fantastic beer.
Aren't you glad that I write these down?
Yeah.
You know, for this it's essentially for this purpose. This is what we're doing here. So let's keep this train rolling. Got to keep on going. Best colorist, guys. So this one is like this category kind of sets the mood of a comic. It's very much based on tone and it's a colorist is like just as important as a writer. So
yep.
For mine this week I went for Ivan Plasencia on The Batman Who Laughs. His work, like, there's that contrast between when the Batman Who Laughs is telling the story and when you actually get to see the backstory told. That contrast in tone is amazing because it starts off with a card game of Batman Who Laughs playing the card game, and then it ends with Adam snoring into the mic.
I am not asleep.
Yet.
Hey, live your own life.
Hey, who's your colorist?
A 4-year-old child with some crayons. No, my colorist is Jason Wordy for God Country because that book is colored amazingly well.
Do you have, like, an example? Like, because I've gotten one word or one sentence.
You give me that mouse and they keep... The earth is ending. I'm gonna pull up some examples for you kids.
Okay. But, I mean, like, it'd be better if you could describe them for the people listening.
They just do a very good job. So the entire thing is about a grandpa with Alzheimer's that's losing his mind, and he gets a sword that's magical and godlike. But they do a very good job of setting the tone with the color. And, like, when he's having a fit, the color blurs a little bit and isn't exactly in the lines.
Does it skew?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
Like, check out this rad fucking coloring.
Oh, I like the contrast of the whites on the blade against the rest
of
the...
Yeah, and that's how the sword's drawn, I mean, with different colors and everything, but that's how the sword's drawn pretty much
all the time.
Nice. Yeah. Here is one of the gods that he fights.
Oh, he looks very much... hey, Tyler, isn't that pretty much Jack Kirby up there?
It looks very Kirby-esque, kind of old-school celestial stuff.
Sure, that's what I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Here he is
Kirby crackle coming
with his giant fucking sword that he's got no problem with. I mean, that's more of an art thing, but still.
Nice.
Yeah, God Country's fucking rad.
I like it.
And the coloring, I thought, was done very well. Like...
Tyler?
my nomination, which should definitely win because it's the best, is Jeff Lemire for AD, After Death. It's the book he did
with Scott Snyder. Yeah.
Jeff Lemire did all the art, and he did it in a like watercolor painted sort of style.
Yeah, I'm looking at the first page here.
But pretty minimalist at the same time. Like a lot of the pages have a lot of white space.
Mm-hmm. There's this page I'm looking at. It's got these like gangless like they look like octopuses with like eight eyes, like spider pusses.
Yeah.
Or vines or something like that.
Yeah, he gets to draw a lot of weird shit in that too. But I just thought the way he set that book up was just gorgeous. Because he'd really, I mean, if we're talking about how color sets the tone for a book, he set an amazing tone through all three issues of that. Each one's a little bit different. The different parts of the world just look completely different.
I like how he did the skies, the clouds and stuff. That's really dope. I mean, there is a sun behind the clouds a bit.
Yeah, he just is gorgeous at drawing the backgrounds. It's so much of it is beautiful, and it is entirely due to Jeff Lemire's art, which is primarily like,
mm-hmm.
He's really minimalist with lines a lot of the time in this book, and the color is really what sets it apart.
All right,
that's why Jeff Lemire wins.
I mean, I'd be willing to give it to him just solely based on the originality of his work.
Yeah,
but at the same time, I'm seeing that for Adam's work, Adam's suggestion too. So, I don't know. This is a hard one.
I mean,
Jeff Lemire, for
Jason Wardy.
Hey, how about
flip a coin? Anybody got a coin?
If Adam can tell me how many issues of God Country... Wait, is it a limited or ongoing?
It's ongoing.
If you can tell me how many are out right now without looking it up...
Let me make sure that I was right about that. I'll be willing to flip a
coin. You're in some kind of mood tonight.
Oh, I just don't think the things that you don't know what you're talking about should win. How many issues? Come on, let's go.
Pretty sure it's six.
I'm willing to give it a coin flip if he's right. Survey says...
I gotta find out if it's out or not. Hang on. I don't even know if it's...
And I'm also pretty sure God Country is limited, dog.
Is it limited?
Yeah.
I think it is limited, yeah.
Oh, well, then that sucks. That narrows the chances.
So six came out in June.
Oh, then it probably is. It probably was 6-issue limited, then.
Yeah, because the trade paperback's out in August.
Oh, that's
so
unfortunate.
Yeah, it is six.
Ah, fuck it. Flip a coin, then.
Heads, I win. Tails, Tyler's a faggot. You can cut that out. Oh, look. Oh. Tyler's a big gay boy.
Why would we cut it out? So we got Jason Wardy wins for colorist.
With protests. With protests.
Under duress.
Under
duress. Where's your protest?
I think that...
I know what I'm talking about.
All right. Up next is best cover. Best cover this year. I love this issue. I love this award because it just... It makes me go through the year and be like, that was nice, and that was nice, and that was nice.
That was good.
So what else go first?
All right. Well, mine is actually very recent from now. Rasputin, Voice of the Dragon, number one. The Mike Mignola variant, because Mike Mignola draws beautiful, moody art. And he's got a lot of his classic Mignola things on the cover, and it's just a really sick Mike Mignola piece.
Yeah, I remember looking at it last week when we nominated it. It was pretty dope.
Very beautiful.
I went with Jeff Shaw's God Country, number one, because the first cover actually does a really good job of giving you a vibe of the color and the art throughout the rest of the book, which is something you don't get in a lot of covers.
Yeah, there's that like orange scar that goes down the center of it. That was pretty dope. Mine is definitely The Red Death by Jason Fabok, Dark Knight's Metal one-shot. It's the one where... The Red Death is charging at the screen.
Is that the one where there's a bunch of skulls around him too?
Yeah. Yep. And you know me, Jason Fabok's art is like, he's up there with Ivan Rice and Gary Frank, man.
Yeah, he's really fucking good.
So I'm sticking to my guns on this. I think The Red Death is the best one this year.
I could give it to The Red Death, because that cover was fucking it's part of the metal series.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fucking metal.
It's metal as fuck, too.
This is true. Yeah, I can give it to that.
I really, it was also an homage to a different cover.
It's like, an homage to a couple different Flash covers, dude.
Yeah, like it's an homage to like old Flash covers. So
where he runs at the reader.
Yeah. Like I thought that was, I mean, I swear I've seen like the exact pose and like stuff around him in the same places.
Oh, for sure.
I just don't know exactly where, but yeah, no, that one, I give it to that. It's fucking rad.
Adam?
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah. Okay, cool, man. Thanks. I appreciate that one. Because I can't lie to you. Jason Fabok is just so good.
Yeah. Is he drawing anything regularly right now?
No, but he's been teasing like he's on a project. Wow. You know what I mean? Like he's like, we're starting something. I'm like, okay, we'll do something. He does one shots here and there, and he does like
But he hasn't had a run like you do on
Justice. He hasn't had a run like that, yeah, for a while. All right, so want to throw in another beer category here real quick, gents?
Yeah. Sure.
Do here. How about your worst brew? How about worst, we go with that one?
Ooh. I'll go first.
All right.
I don't drink bad beer.
Adam's bringing up a second annual Bruzy's joke. Josh don't make mistakes. Adam don't make no bad beers.
I don't make
drink no bad beers.
I don't make it either because that neither. Shit's trash.
Me neither.
So nothing but quality. Only quality passes these lips.
I'm pretty sure Tyler would say nothing but nothing.
maybe. You don't like what you're drinking now.
Yeah, so. And you bought it.
And that's a bad, to be honest, that's a it bad passed, beer.
Passed your but, lips.
Yeah, it's also a very bad beer because it's a wine.
This is true. No argument there.
So your real mistake, your worst beer choice was Tyler. Tyler
yeah.
made
it. You know, yeah, I guess it would be.
What do you got,
that's
Tyler?
That's not his fault. I just don't like any wine.
Nah. No, and that's not a lot of good wine. I like dessert wine.
Mine's pretty dope, dude. I like
mine. Yeah, that is pretty good. So I wrote, I'm calling it Paradise Pucker.
It's a rogue beer.
Yeah, but the caveat to that is I know there was some sour beer this year I drank that I'm not a big fan of those anyways, but there was one that just was particularly objectionable to me. Like
I'm telling you, it's that Kolsch one you had.
It might have been the Kolsch one, but I'm pretty sure that it was
like a tangy Kolsch that you were like, this is disgusting.
Yeah, but I just have it like the more emotional thing, like remembrance I have is that it was a sour, and it probably my gut tells me it was the Rogue one.
Okay,
that's fine. We've had bad experience with weird Rogue beers. They do really good stuff, but also really bad stuff.
They do.
Some of their shit is disgusting.
Yeah, I'm saying Paradise Pucker, but know that I really just mean that one sour beer I drank this year that I really didn't like. It probably was Paradise Pucker.
Okay, I'm gonna put that description in. All right, so my biggest disappointment was the Rogue 7 Hop IPA. It's that one that says, like, the hops are in the shape of a 7.
Oh,
and it's like, on the bottle. Normally, dude, I'm up for pretty much any IPA. I'm like, let's fucking roll the dice on this one. That was a mistake. This stuff was, like it was chilled right. It was like, new. It, like, wasn't on the shelf too long. It was just fucking shit. The hops were, like, working against each other. Like, normally, when you have a lot of different hops in there, I feel you get this, as long as they're all along the same strain or strand, like you get this like really citrusy, flowery feel for it. And like that's what I really love about IPAs. Like Bodie's Off is a great example of that, but that's the same, similar, like similar hop profiles, right? This was like, okay, yeah, let's just see how many fucking hops we can put in a beer and ruin it. And they did.
I mean, somebody had to do it.
So it's like 7 different strains of hops went into this Rogue 7 Hop IPA, and it's just terrible. Blech.
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 Blech. All
right, well, now I got more comic stuff.
Best ongoing. This one's fun.
Oh, we're switching those up? Oh,
that's backwards.
Oh, nominations versus the other page is how I have.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Okay.
Sorry.
So best ongoing.
I'm calling it Birthright. That comic has been solid since day one.
It's a really fucking good comic. Oh, we also had to have the caveat, the Saga caveat we had mentioned last week. Saga wins.
Can't be Saga. Yeah, exactly.
Saga wins, but we got to pick something that's not
Saga. Well, Saga still wins some stuff tonight. We'll just get to it later.
Yeah. So Birthright is actually really, really, really fucking
The premise is killer. The twists and turns that have been in that comic so far have been, like, they're not jumping the shark. You know what I mean? It's not like this is a twist for twist's sake. This is like, this is kind of organic, and I really like it.
They recently had another big one.
Yeah.
That is, still hasn't quite played out, but I'm on board.
Absolutely. You know, when the mage reveal, like, the first one was good. Yep. He's there to kill mages. The second reveal on what the mages are was great. And then this fucking third one and fourth one and fifth one have been just amazing. Just
on, like, it has a very simple premise that they've just subverted every step of the way.
Yeah, like every expectation you have for this kind of story is just like, this is how it's supposed to go. Nope. Nope.
Not how it's going to go.
And it's a beautiful comic as far as art goes.
Yeah.
The way that they draw the Nevermind when he's manifested.
Oh, the Nevermind is so good.
He's like dripping. Like, he's this face that drips blood constantly.
And it, like, it is made of blood that, like, swirls out of him, it looks like.
Yeah. Like if he's got a cut on his chest, it goes like whoop.
That's psychedelic.
Yeah.
It's pretty fucking rad.
Plus, you get, like, the more backstory you get over in Terranos is just like, fuck!
Yeah. So I am going, my nomination is Wicked and Divine, because it is of a totally different vein than Birthright, but it's still got its own crazy twists and turns.
So it's pop culture meets gods.
Yeah, like gods.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
12 gods are reincarnated in the... Like, it's kind of unclear as to whether they're just reincarnated in the bodies of these people, or these people always were the gods and are just awoken.
Yeah.
But once they wake up, they have 2 years to live, and then they die. And
they burn so bright.
Yeah, there's just some shit has gone down, especially recently. This story is incredible. What do you got, Adam?
I like Wicked and the Divine because it definitely fulfills that, like, that niche of, like, guess who this character is? Oh, that's totally Bowie. Or that's
no, yeah, I mean, it started
Michael
off...
Jackson?
Actually, I haven't seen Jackson, but Jack you've seen Man. Prince.
Yeah, there's
you've
Prince.
You've seen Daft Punk.
Maybe Michael Jackson is Jesus, and they're saving him.
Maybe. That's no, we possible. Already know who all the gods are.
Oh, they're all named, finally?
They're all named.
Yeah. I like how, like, so Athena is Athena, right? But isn't another name for Athena Minerva?
I think so. But Athena's not in it. Minerva is.
Yeah, I know.
But, yeah. Yeah, there's some crazy, crazy twisty shits going down in that. So, Adam, what's your nomination?
Okay, so Minerva is the Roman goddess of wisdom, which is Athena.
Yeah.
So my nomination for Best Ongoing is a little biased because it is the only ongoing that I am reading at the time. That'd be Family Trade, though, which is actually pretty good.
I remember when you reviewed it. It was you had a lot to say about it.
Yeah, it's about a floating island that is neutral from all global politics, but has its own political espionage and fun things like that going on. And it's about the family that works behind the scenes to try and keep everything balanced via takeovers, assassinations, spying, blackmail. So it's pretty interesting. And it's a very interesting world, to say the least. And the art in it is very fun, and it's all done in watercolor.
Yeah, I'm looking at it.
Or at least looks like it's supposed to be done in watercolor.
I'm looking at it now, and the story's by Justin Jordan and Nikki Ryan, and then the art is done by Morgan Beam, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, so the art is actually pretty surprising.
Yeah. The first comic came out in October, and you know what surprises me? Doesn't surprise me about all three of our nominations?
Huh.
They're all Image comics.
Oh yeah. That's not surprising.
Every one of them.
It's because Image is the shit.
You know, next year, I think we should take a look at Invincible, because that's ending soon.
Oh, yeah. We could just do an overview of the whole thing. I dropped off that around,
I was like 100, issue 100
a little
or
after
so.
100.
Like, I finished the Viltrumite War.
Yeah, I went a little bit past that bit. I don't remember exactly where I dropped it.
I think my last trade is like 13 or 14 or something like that. I don't remember.
Yeah.
But that's neither here nor there. What's our best ongoing this year, gents?
Family Trade, I already told you.
No, I'll give it to Birthright.
Really? I love that.
I love Wicked and Divine, but Birthright is just fucking rad. Like,
it gets your jollies going, dude.
Every single issue of that book is 100% on point.
And so your main character is Mikey. Every time he's like, I will prevail and succeed, he just gets beat to shit. Like, every
time.
He's
won, like, once.
Right, and that one was the first mage he killed, right?
Yeah.
And then that was it. After that, it was like, what's the thing that inhabits Brennan?
Oh, yeah, he's got another magical creature.
Yeah, whatever's inside of him fought fucking the Nevermind inside of Mikey and just beat the shit out of him.
Yeah, that was pretty great. But yeah, I'll give it to Birthright.
I will give it to Birthright as well, and only because Family Trade only has 2 issues.
Ah, I could see that being a problem.
So it could end up to be a total pile of shit.
I think we should get Adam to read some more comics next year.
Yeah.
Or, you know, feed him good stuff. How about that? We feed you good comics.
Fair enough. So, you guys, we are a week away from New Year's, and I don't know.
We'll do resolutions. next week.
Oh, yeah, then that's fine. I would like to point out my resolution from last year so far is a success.
What was it?
I'll tell you next week.
Okay, I hope you remember it, because otherwise I got to go back and listen. I didn't. I know I didn't fulfill mine. I said that we'd cover a con out of state, and that didn't happen.
I don't remember at all what mine was.
You said was keep. You said keep doing dope shit.
That sounds like something I'd say. And in that, massive success.
Let's go with best new comic.
No,
gents.
Best. Are we not?
I'm going off of my list, not yours.
Oh, that's right.
But
the best new comic.
So I picked Batman White Knight. It's 3 issues in, and it's pretty dope. I'm really digging it. I think I like the premise. I like the art. It's been consistent so far with story. The twists have been organic and fun, not twists for twist's sake. It was really cool seeing Joker take over the Rogues Gallery. I was just like, that's dope. The
that's rad.
The twist with the Harley Quinn characters, I think that was really really well done.
Oh my god, that was such a good like meta commentary on
on the Harley Quinn character, right? Like Harley Quinzel versus Harley Quinn.
Mm-hmm.
I really fucking dug that. The whole story, like, this is taking the premise that Joker's Jack Napier.
Right.
But I'm fine with how that's going.
I mean, you don't even need to take a certain interpretation like the Tim Burton Batman where he was Jack Napier. It's just like that's just his name. It just happens to be his name. But it is the Joker.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, that's my best new comic. Adam?
My best new comic is actually Kingpin, which was... it really surprised me, to be honest. It was also why I got my most underrated, which we'll get into later, but...
Spoilers.
Yeah, I really... that's right there. I really enjoyed the whole humanizing of a villain. And especially with somebody like the Kingpin, to where you could see that, I mean, even if it leads to his own ill-gotten gains, there's still good things that somebody like a mob boss would do, especially for the publicity and things like that when he's as big as a Kingpin. So it was really interesting to see it all from more of a
it's told from
side.
Like he's telling his story, right?
Yeah, like, he's telling a story to like a reporter, a journalist, a journalist that he really likes, that he wants to have her write the biography about him.
Yeah. And this was a limited series, too.
It was. It was only
five issues. Yeah.
But it was surprisingly a hell of a lot better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I remember, I think I read the first issue with you, mm-hmm. and I dug the shit out of it.
Yeah, it's really good.
Like, I always liked that idea, because in my mind, villains in comics, especially in superhero comics, they got the best toys.
Mm-hmm.
They do, right? Like, Norman Osborn, fucking sick, dude. You got Mr. Sinister, or you got... Kingpin, or I mean, those are just Marvel side. Look at the other side, Sinestro.
Oh, that's gross,
man. Sinestro, Reverse Flash. These guys are like the heroes of their own stories, but they're also fucking psychopaths.
Yep.
And I love that about villains. Doctor Doom, probably best villain ever.
But yeah, so, I would actually like to see more series, more short limited series come out like Kingpin for other villains.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure there are others that have already been done, but. I really dug it.
I agree.
I also liked that there was one fight in the entire series, and it was the Kingpin beats the shit out of a mugger after he drops his date off like a gentleman, and then goes back and beats the dude to death.
Very much out of Daredevil, the Netflix series.
Yes, very much.
Nice.
The Kingpin was actually...
Did it take more cues from the story, like from that series at all, do you think? In the way that he presented himself, was he very methodical and shit like that? Like, obviously, Kingpin's methodical.
Yeah, he was. I mean, maybe not to that extent, to where it wasn't. I wouldn't say
like making an omelet every morning and shit like that.
Yeah, I wouldn't say he came off borderline OCD, like the Kingpin does in the Daredevil series, which still works really well. Vincent D'Onofrio kills it there, but he still you get that very much larger than life feel from him the entire time, and like he does his thing and. He does the shit out of it.
Yeah, I like it. Tyler?
I nominated Dark Knight's Metal.
Oh, it's such a good comic.
It's metal as fuck, and it's
You remember when we talked about it first coming out? Like, back when they announced it? Yeah. We're like, oh, Scott Snyder, Greg Capullo are doing one last hurrah, whoop-de-fucking-do.
Yeah, and then it turned out it's fire.
Blows us
cylinders.
Out of the water, man. Mm-hmm.
It's good.
I mean, especially the issue that came out this week was just rad. Now, all this being said, having thought about it for a week, I would change my nomination to White Knight. partially because it is just a solid book, but also because it's such a... Okay, like, Dark Knight's Metal is just a new crisis event.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be called Dark Crisis. That was like the original pitch,
I guess. When Snyder first pitched it, yeah.
Yeah, it's just another Crisis event that happens to be a pretty damn good quality with some unique ideas. But Batman White Knight is an entirely new kind of Batman story.
It is.
Like, they've done...
they've done Joker Goes Good before.
They've done Joker Goes Good or Joker Turns Sane, but it's never been like this.
Yeah.
It's never been where there's still this rivalry between them, just in a totally different way.
Yeah, because if you look at Batman's characterization, especially in this third issue that just came out, he's going kind of fanatical, dude.
Oh, he's losing it.
He's losing his grip on reality because it's because Alfred's dying. It's one of the things. It's also the fact that like he can't get a grasp on Joker. The city is turning against him.
I especially like that. Like the Joker has sussed out this like real estate plot by billionaires.
Yeah,
and it's like news to Batman.
No, it's not. Well, it's not. News to Gordon.
It's news to Gordon, but also like Batman knows it's going on,
but he accepts it. Yeah,
he sees somebody, some like rich smug asshole, out bragging about it.
Yeah,
it's like he never really realized. He knew this was going on.
But yeah, but when Gordon confronts him,
he never really realized how bad people actually were.
Yeah, but when Gordon confronts him, Batman just says it's part of justice. It's just what do you expect?
Yeah.
Like, this, of course this exists. I'm still going to do my job.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, from the taxpayer's side, you're like, fuck you, man.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, so having thought more about it, I would change my nomination to that because it's so unique.
I like how I'm picking all the fucking winners this week, man. This is great. My year's been top.
I never win.
You win all the time.
Nah, I really don't, though.
Oh.
I don't care.
It sounds like you care a little bit.
No, that's all good.
All right, what's our next category?
The one that Adam wins. The one that Batman wins.
Sweet.
Best Batman Limited.
Batman is winning a lot, so I can't be too upset.
Best Limited Series.
Best Limited Series.
I went with Dark Knight's Metal.
I went with the Dark Knight's Metal one-shots.
So that means Dawnbreaker, The Drowned, The Merciless, Murder Machine.
Red Death.
I picked Best Limited because I couldn't pick. I picked Dark Knight's Metal because I couldn't pick Justice League versus Suicide Squad.
Yeah,
it started in 2016.
Oh, right.
And if it hadn't, I would pick that because I thought that was really well done. But unfortunately, the criteria for this is the limited series has to have begun this year.
Mm-hmm.
Tyler's one-shots are a great, great look at the different perverted versions of Batman's nightmares told through the lens of the Justice League. I think that's really well done.
Yeah, I want to read those one-shots. They look really cool.
Do you have a favorite out of them, Tyler? Because we've gone through all of them now. Batman and Laughs was the last one.
Right.
I think probably Murder Machine.
Alfred thing?
See, I don't... It's hard to pick. Murder Machine stands out for me because it was the one I thought I wouldn't... Like, if I didn't
you
like
didn't
one of them,
like one,
it would
be
that one. I was like, you know, I'm not a huge fan of Cyborg. I don't know what they're going to do. And then it just had this totally insane story of this cyborg Batman making like Alfred bots, and it's just,
and the
like,
AI took over the city
fuck?
And shit.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like, it was so much better than I initially gave it credit for, and that I thought that part of it was impressive. That they took an idea that I wasn't really down with, and all right, they fucking made it work.
I'd have to go with the Merciless, not just because of the premise of Ares getting involved, but also because Francis Manapul drew it.
Yeah, it was a very gorgeous book, and it was a really damn good story.
Yeah, absolutely. It starts off with that secret meeting between Argus and Shade and all that shit, and then it just gets busted in by the Merciless. Adam.
I'm going with God Country, because it's literally a story about a crotchety old man that does crotchety old man shit on a cosmic level.
So, I would argue that all three of our comics are derivative.
Yeah.
All three of our comics based on existing lore. Unless, does God Country involve the traditional pantheon of gods that, like, you
no.
know? So it's gods, like, gods of what? Gods of Earth?
Well,
gods of...
they have, like, a god of war, they have, which is the
but
dude
it's
with
not
the
Ares.
Hammer, but it's not Ares.
Okay.
So they've basically taken gods from other cultures and just renamed them and reskinned them. And then kind of picked and chose
whatever they felt was awesome at the time.
And then worked it in together into one family of gods.
So I'm going to give mine to God Country. Not because you haven't won one.
Aww.
But because I think out of all of ours, it's probably the most unique.
Yeah, it definitely is the most unique.
Plus, I like the premise of, like, this guy who's losing his memory, going
also,
insane.
It's the only one that's not an event.
It's true.
And usually,
although
whole,
a limited series could be very much an event.
It could be, but I mean, on the whole, events are super fun and flashy and exciting, but there is a lot to be said about just dope-ass stories that start and end, and that's it.
And there's your
they
story.
They don't drag on. They're not... Not a bunch of tie-ins. Like years yeah. of history and how much times. It just is. It is its own work.
But yeah, I think it's another great criteria to give to that. So, yeah, God Country gets our best limited series.
You guys should read it. It's six. It's fucking good.
I think I should because it's done by – it's written by Donny Cates. The art's by Jeff Shaw. The colors are by Jason Wordy.
Jason Wordy.
But I think the reason that we should is because Donny Cates has done mostly limited series, and I haven't seen him do a bad one. He had what is that first one he did with us that we
the
read?
Drone Superhero?
Yeah, Buzzkill.
Buzzkill.
Buzzkill
right.
was really fucking good. And then just seeing him progress, so, like he also did Repo Men, or he did the one where he ran like the Repossession Crew.
Of like the Human Opera?
No.
Oh.
I'll look it up. No, not Repo that. Yeah.
We should do a beer award next.
You want to do a beer award next?
Yeah,
okay,
let's
so
do
we've
best
got
best returning.
Best returning, that's a good one.
Yes.
So mine
all good beers.
Mine is Bodhisattva. So Bodhisattva originally came out in 2016 and I got to taste it at the brewery, so it couldn't count as best new.
It's the same day that I tried what I wanted to be my best new.
Yeah.
That's
exactly.
Right.
So I got instead to call this one Best Returning Brew, Georgetown's Bodhisattva, especially after it was canned. Fuck yes, they put it in cans. They put Georgetown beers in cans this year. Rah! The paybacks. The paybacks, that's what it was called, the paybacks that Donny Cates wrote.
Oh, yep, that's right.
I don't get the big deal about cans.
They're cheaper, they're better for your beer because there's no glass to like seep light through.
No
light
okay, that all making sense.
And they're better for the environment.
I can see. Okay, fair enough.
There's a lot
and
of
you
reasons.
You can crush them in your hand so you feel like a real man.
And then you belch.
You need help with that, don't you?
I need all the help. What's your best returning brew, Adam?
Mine is Gusta Crema, also from Georgetown.
So good.
It's a light beer that straight tastes that like a cup tasty. Of coffee.
Yeah, it's an ale. It's,
yeah.
That's a coffee. Yeah.
And you could drink 100 of them, and, I mean, you'd eventually feel full, but not like a coffee porter or a coffee stout where it's like one
it's
or two.
Really light.
Yeah, it's a very, very light beer. It's a good summer beer. Normally, I don't go in for that kind of thing unless it's wicked hot out. But I could drink this all year long. Like, that Gusta Crema is probably my favorite beer right now. I wish
yeah.
I could find it more places.
It always sells out. You can only find it at the brewery. And
yeah, I just said I wish I could go to, like, the local bar and find it on tap.
So we did one tasting of it when we had Commentary Plays go through it, and everyone had one, and it was gone like right
yeah.
away.
I remember at the brewery, it stopped me in my tracks. Like, we were trying a couple different things, and I tried it, and I just was like, holy shit, this is good.
I'm pretty – okay. And then, we got another growler of it earlier this year, too, and it was just – every time it comes up, I make sure that Lisa lets me know so that we can go get one.
They also brought one to the barbecue, too. Didn't they bring our mini keg of it? No.
No.
Oh. Remembering it.
We did have a barbecue
was.
With Georgetown this year, though. That was dope.
It was.
I was going to add, like, at the end of this, I was going to ask, like, what were some standout moments for you guys this year, but we'll get there.
All
right. Tyler, I'm sorry. This one's going to be a little bit longer for you. We're already pushing
life.
Time.
My best returning, Kitty Cat Blues.
Oh, my goodness.
That's
it's got
just
blue...
such a goddamn good beer.
Such a unique flavor, too. It's got the blueberry, it's got
it's
the hoppy IPA, but then it's also got catnip.
Yeah.
Which you're like, what the fuck is
that? Yeah, you know, maybe I just don't know what catnip tastes like, but I couldn't identify that flavor out of it. But it is still just a really fucking good beer.
Well, ladies and gents, we're coming down to the wire. There's a couple more categories left, one of them being most underrated comic. This is on pretty much an individual basis. This is just what we determined is something that we all think you should have read this year, and we enjoyed it immensely, but didn't get maybe as much press as it deserved.
Yeah.
Mine for this one is definitely Green Lantern Planet of the Apes.
Sure, it's not Green Lantern POTA? Like Green Lantern and the potato? No, never mind.
Are you done?
Yeah.
Okay. I really appreciate how this went. Just like the Star Trek Green Lantern that was the last couple years, this was really good. It tied in with a little bit of Blackest Night, but it was also more than that. There was more ring lore in there as well. And any time that we get to see Dr. Zaius get a ring.
Dr. Zaius.
Or you got to see Cornelius. Cornelius got a ring that was very special. Hal Jordan was
a
essentially...
Monkey. No, craziest
Hal,
story.
Hal Jordan was essentially playing the Charlton Heston role in this. But it takes place after the first movie. So it's really cool to see those two lores blend. And to be honest, I really think that any one of the DC Comics crossovers with either IDW or with Boom, they're worth a look just because they're like, yeah, do it. Go nuts. See what happens. Like, they don't shy away from, no, you can't do this with this character. Or that character would never say that. They let it happen as the writer intends, which I think is really awesome of DC to actually do. So my most underrated is definitely Green Lantern Planet of the Apes.
What's yours, Tyler?
Mine is Animosity, story of...
animals gain sentience?
It begins, the first couple pages of the first issue, all animals on Earth suddenly gain human-level sentience, everything. And it's...
How many people go vegan?
Well, that's a big part of the thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah?
Like, some people do, but then, I mean, there's the big problem of, well, suddenly you have all these people that are... They're people now, basically. Animals are now, like, living, breathing things like they just were, except they can think and talk. And
they're just, get a job?
Yeah. Like, a lot of them.
Oh, my God, that's amazing.
But the world goes to shit because, well, a lot of them are angry, and they want to get revenge.
Well, yeah, the dynamic of human-beast interaction changes.
It's not like they just suddenly had a new existence. It's they had their existence, and now they are able to think and talk like people and remember everything in the past. So,
if I remember right, there was that story where, like, the family dog gained sentience and stuck with the family.
Well, that's actually the thing. That is one of the main characters.
Yeah.
It's Jessie is the daughter, and she's the only one of the family still around, and Sandor.
The dog. Yeah, the bloodhound. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so I wasn't wrong in that.
No, you're not wrong.
I clearly remember that.
But it doesn't get as much love as it deserves.
It's also from, like, a fairly indie press, too.
It's from
isn't it?
Aftershock Comics.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's got kind of a weird, similar history as Image, and there's a bunch of other creators that kind of stuck together to make their own thing.
Mm-hmm.
But none of them are as high profile.
Sort of like Xenoscope.
Kinda.
Or Avatar Press, or...
Yeah.
Or Black
Mask.
I guess,
like, a lot of them.
Yeah, like, Black Mask has a lot of named, like, really big named creators behind it and stuff, but, like, you don't hear a lot about it because of the subject matter or because of the idea that, you know, Diamond Comics is the main distributor.
Yeah. But I want to nominate Animosity for most underrated because it does not get nearly as much attention as it deserves for being such an original story. Like, they're taking this idea that I've never... It's a post-apocalyptic thing,
mm-hmm.
but with a totally unique twist, and everything they throw at it is just incredible. Like, one of the biggest problems in the series is that now we have all these meat eaters. How do we feed them?
And, like, oh, shit, like carnivores.
Yeah, like carnivores. And then every group has, like, a different solution to it.
Like, so prey. Prey becomes a thing, right?
Yeah.
Like in Zootopia, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that whole argument of, like, we were some victims and prey.
Some
and,
animals just stick with that.
Really? They're some, like, this is our lot in life. This is what we do.
Like, there's a whole couple issues
like
with, like,
gators.
This
cows.
Vulture.
Yeah.
Like, a vulture forces a bunch of animals to eat other animals.
Oh, so
that
it can
get
eat.
Meat. I mean, it's like, it's not just, like, suddenly the animals are they're awake and now they're just sort of like people. It's like, no, they're so much like people that there are psychopath villain animals.
Nice.
And they'll turn on each other. They're sneaky. I mean, it's...
The conniving.
It's like in The Walking Dead, how really, like, the people are the main villains.
Sure.
Like that, except way fucking better. So nice. That's my most underrated.
Adam, I know which one is yours, and I think it's well-deserved.
I'm going with Kingpin again. Same reason it got best new. It just kind of came out of nowhere and really blew me away.
And like Marvel does, they tend to have these little diamonds in the rough, but because their shelf presence is 40 comics a week, you tend to find, like, one or two that just get, like, thrown by the wayside.
Mm-hmm.
Like, their sales were strong enough to, like, yeah, let's let it finish.
Yeah.
But It didn't go anywhere.
It also helped that it was probably only five issues, so they're like, it's five, just let it run it out. But yeah, it's not as, I mean, for Marvel to not really do a superhero comic and then still nail it was a big surprise.
Yeah. Absolutely. So we're moving on into best television series or Netflix streaming series or comics streaming series. So I ran down the list last week, but I think I neglected some.
I think so too, but I don't. I couldn't tell you what they were.
So just so
obviously not winners.
Can I change mine to Riverdale?
You know what? Yeah, last hour.
It wasn't better than my nomination.
So I want to run down the list of series just off the top of my head real quick, and we'll see if I forget any again. Got Flash, Arrow, Legends of Tomorrow, S.H.I.E.L.D., Inhumans. This is just on TV.
Supergirl.
Gotham, Supergirl, Riverdale. Walking Dead, Riverdale, fucking Preacher. That's 10 right there just on television.
Fuck, Happy. Preacher is good.
Yeah, and then Happy. Then we move into streaming. This year we had Iron Fist, Defenders, Punisher, Runaways. What else did we have? We had The Tick got its
the
premiere
Tick.
This year.
Oh, yeah.
We had, oh, God, I think on CWC there was more for, what's her name?
Vixen.
Yeah, that was a cartoon,
yeah.
Though.
And then shit, on the cartoon side, we had Justice League Action premiered this year.
Yeah.
There's a lot.
There was a lot of comic book television out
but
there.
But only one was the best.
And I think Adam and I are in agreement on this one.
Yeah.
It's Punisher.
Okay, well, I was going to say my nomination first, but that's fine.
Oh.
I was going to say S.H.I.E.L.D. because S.H.I.E.L.D.'s fucking rad.
You know what?
All kinds of fun places.
You know, the beginning of this year, do you guys remember we all gathered at your place and we watched the Ghost Rider episodes,
yeah.
Man, and those were fucking dope.
Good.
Yeah, no, what I did see of S.H.I.E.L.D. I really liked, it's just not, it's good, it's just not better than The Punisher.
No, I have to give it to The Punisher this year. I know
Punisher is really
it's
fucking
like
good.
It's like too recent, of course, like, you know, just like
Punisher
in the Oscars,
like
everything that's at the end of the year is what's hot, prominent in the Oscars.
It's also like, I think it's kind of underrated. Like I saw a lot of reviews for The Punisher, and most of what they focused on was, this doesn't really say what I want to say about gun violence. It's like, okay, that's kind of an undercurrent, maybe, but that's not the point of The Punisher.
No.
He kills people with guns.
Right?
Yeah.
It's not,
and
like,
he
the
is
Punisher's,
damn good at it.
The Punisher's got a lot of, like, overbearing, overarching themes as well as undercurrent themes,
like,
right?
I think if The Punisher had tackled gun violence a little bit better, like, I mean, there is the senator or the who's trying to push through more gun laws.
Yeah, he's the one in the hotel.
But they didn't
yeah.
make a humongous deal out of him in the rest of the series. Had they done that, I think this show would have been a lot more critically acclaimed.
What if they did what if they had taken the Sun's story, the Micro Sun story, to its ultimate conclusion? If Frank hadn't intervened, it would have been a Sandy Hook shooting.
It would have been. You're right.
You know what I mean? Like if they.
Maybe.
I'm telling you, dude, if Frank didn't get involved, that little kid was on the path to becoming a domestic terrorist.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Because he was, even when Frank fucking, like, put the knife to him, he's like, do it! I don't have anything to live for anyway!
Yeah.
It's like, fuck, dude! this kid is actually indicative and representative of a silent, not majority, but a silent class of child. And
yeah,
I think
it's a damn good series.
Yeah. It's well shot.
It's
well written.
Well acted.
The opening credits are
so good.
Dope.
They're the best opening credits out of the Marvel series.
I don't know. It's tied for me with Daredevil.
Daredevil's
still
really good.
Really fucking
the wax
good.
Slash blood slowly dripping over everything.
Yeah, absolutely. Or there's that. There's something to be said about the Defenders opening, but that's just because it's them coming together and it's
the
city of New York and stuff like that.
But the Punisher opening
is
so
good.
Like,
I agree.
The music that. Animation for it, it's incredible. So yeah, I will agree. Punisher definitely was the best television streaming show this
year. And
then
the other thing about the Punisher that's like it exists on its own.
Yeah.
Like every other
thing you need to know is who Karen Page is.
There you go. That's
yeah,
it.
Now
yeah.
You kinda need to see the first half of season 2 of Daredevil.
Just yes. for his just because
true,
they
true.
Never they never do re-show what made Frank Frank. They never show the killing of his family.
Which I kind of like that it
I
wasn't
agree.
An origin.
Yeah.
Like, we
yeah.
got his origin in Daredevil Season 2, and it's
that's
seems
the last
like,
thing I want to mention about this. Sorry, go ahead. Sorry.
Like, kind of a complaint we've had about a lot of movies is that they're all origin stories.
Yeah.
And it's like the next one is always better, because you don't have to, you're not bogged down by that.
Mm-hmm.
Unless, it's certain other, there are certain exceptions. Iron Man was an exception to the rule.
There's exceptions, but in general,
Doctor Strange was a really great origin story.
Yeah, but maybe the second one's gonna be even better.
We don't need Batman Begins again.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't need Man of Steel.
We don't need another Spider-Man. That's
deep understanding of him. So they just fucking pass through it. His origin is there, but it's only because of the events surrounding it, which is its own new story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
The last thing I think that the reason that Punisher also gets best series is because, along with the Purple Man and with Wilson Fisk, this has a fantastic set of villains.
Oh my god,
yeah. Yes.
This is like Billy Russo
is
up there with Wilson Fisk and with the Purple Man.
What I liked about Billy Russo too is he's for sure the main villain by the end of it, but he doesn't start out that way.
Start as it, right?
And it's not a hard flip. Like it's and a slow burn.
He doesn't just show up halfway. He's there the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's not like the Butcher or whatever in the second season of Daredevil or the weaving in and out of the hand in Iron Fist or even in Luke Cage. He's not the guy from Luke Cage.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Diamondback.
I knew it had something to do with snakes.
Well, like all of his villains are kind of like that too. Like Cottonmouth, Diamondback, like he's probably going to have Viper or some shit coming up in season 2.
So there wasn't any of that nonsense going on. They broke their Netflix mold a little bit.
A little bit.
They could have cut an episode or two, but...
Of Punisher?
Yeah.
Yeah, I could have.
But...
Yeah, like six or seven.
They broke out of a lot of their tropes the way they constructed their series, and it was so good.
I agree. So Punisher is a well-deserved... any honorable mentions other than S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Anything
that stands out? Riverdale for you, obviously.
Oh, Riverdale. Riverdale's fucking amazing. But it's on a totally different axis.
Like, you said that Preacher was good.
Oh, shit. Yeah, Preacher. Preacher is one...
So how do they... Like, I've got it, but how do they handle the Santa Killers in that one?
Oh,
because he showed up at the end of the last season.
Yeah, no, he's in the lot, and he is pretty much a spitting image of
his comic?
Of his comic.
Yeah?
Yeah?
Awesome. That's what you want, right?
Yeah.
Do they ever go to hell?
Kind of,
but they don't do the thing where like the Angel of Death and the Devil are having the chess game.
No,
they don't do that.
The only time you really see them go to hell is when they go to get the Saint of Killers.
Okay,
it's they show you where the Saint of Killers
came from, or whatever. Well,
where his soul is technically, and he's basically just reliving his last couple days over and over and over again because he finds out like his family died and he murders a bunch of people in a bar.
Well, that's his origin. That's how that happened.
But they kind of make it seem like that's his own torture. And then
relives that
over and over. And then the angels go and get him.
Yeah, I remember that from the first season. Yeah.
Yeah. Then that's really all you ever see of an afterlife. Well, no, they do go to hell. They go to hell with Arsface, actually.
To go get Arsface, right? Because he sends them to hell in the first season.
Yeah, he's still in it. Up into the... I think I've got an episode or two left of season 2, and he's still down there. It's a giant prison, and Arsface befriends Hitler.
And that's awesome.
Dude, that's like... The left turns they take are so fucking... Such a hard left, but it's just so entertaining.
Is it still good?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So,
like, this entire season... For most of this season, they're hanging out with Cassidy's son.
Okay. And which Cassidy's, isn't a thing.
Yeah, but Cassidy's son is, like... 65 with lung cancer and about to die.
Gotcha.
Because Cassidy's like 100 something years old. Yeah.
That's what I liked about towards the end of Preacher, you get more of Cassidy's story, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you see him as an Irish lad in like the World War One. Or then like you see him come to America and see the Eiffel Tower, the
Statue of Liberty.
Not the Statue of Liberty either. It's the Empire State Building.
That's what it is. Yeah.
They hang out around. I really dug that.
Cassidy is probably the best part of that show.
So my question about it then is, do they start hitting the emotional vampirism of Cassidy and Tulip and stuff? Like, you know how he eventually gets Tulip into a stupor after Jesse falls out of the plane in the comic? Remember how he basically drugs Tulip to become, like, his girlfriend?
Like, that's going to be in, like, a couple seasons later.
Oh, they do hook up.
I figured.
They have hooked up in the show. But they haven't gotten into that at all, really. Okay, yet. Cool. Yeah.
Right on. Any other honorable mentions for television? I stopped watching The Flash last year.
So did I.
Legend of Tomorrow is supposedly having some good stuff, and Melissa Benoist said if Greg, whatever his name is, was on the show anymore, Andrew Kreisberg, if he was on the show anymore, she'd quit being Supergirl because of the rape allegations. Anything else? No.
Gotham is going into some pretty crazy places.
Oh yeah, Gotham has him becoming like a vigilante. Bruce is a vigilante now.
Yeah,
like, and he
wears
12.
A cowl that just doesn't have ears. I think they did a time gap between a couple of the seasons. I think
because it's still the same actor. Maybe it's the puberty gap, like with Game of Thrones.
Yeah, they have the dude that's set up to be the Joker. His face is already fucked up. Like, okay. It looks like from some of the stills that I've seen that he's already cut his face off and stapled it back on.
Like last season.
Did he actually cut his face off, though? Okay, yeah, I've only seen stills and stuff.
Man, as long as that one guy is still doing great as Harvey Bullock, I think that show... As long as Jim and Harvey are still that same dynamic they have, I think it's still a good show.
Oh, yeah. It's actually a show I need to give a little bit more of a chance, to be honest.
I don't, because I went through all of season one, and you saw what happened to Mooney and shit, and then it's just... It's just trying so hard.
Oh, dude, and then she gets, like... exiled to like this weird underground dungeon.
Oh, I remember. I watched the whole thing.
Was that all in season one?
Yeah.
Jesus. Yeah, it has got some weird parts. Apparently, I think she's actually dead now.
I think she is too.
Yeah, I don't know. I just.
Comic book TV is weird.
It is. You know, the reason I'm even bringing up Gotham at all is it seems like they're doing some real ballsy stuff over there now.
Yeah.
So.
Arrow couldn't give a shit about.
It's Batman with a bow.
Yeah. It's also like
CW
drama. Did
he name drop Batman this season too? He name dropped Bruce Wayne this season.
Oh, did he?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Apparently, the guys on 4chan are calling Arrow Felicity Smoke and Friends.
Yeah. Felicity Smoke.
I've heard that complaint.
So good looking.
All right. So we got to get into best movie.
We all are in 100% total agreement on this one, so you want to say it on three?
Is
it going to be 1-2 go or 1-2-3 go?
1-2-3 Thor Ragnarok.
Thor Ragnarok.
Justice League. Oh. We also didn't all say it at the same time, so
Thor
my goof kind of missed.
Ragnarok.
Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah, Thor Ragnarok was rad as hell.
Quick 2-second highlight from you guys. What's the best part of it?
The Hulk.
Everything.
Yeah.
The whole movie. Okay, so we've had other movies that break the old third movie curse.
Yeah.
This fucking shattered it.
It's the best Thor movie.
And it's not even like, I think Captain America 3, you know, Civil War breaks the third movie curse.
Because it's an Avengers movie.
Because it's an Avengers movie. You're like that's the kind of thing. I don't think Iron Man 3 stinks. A lot of people
Iron Man 3 sucks.
It's terrible.
A lot of people don't like it, clearly. But Pepper Thor Fox Ragnarok is so, it is the best Thor movie, like, head and shoulders above the other two.
It is, and I like the Thor movies.
Yeah, me too.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I thought...
I think they've gotten better every time.
I agree.
Oh, yeah, I'd say the first one is the weakest, absolutely.
What I love about the first one is they got Kenneth Branagh to direct it. They got a Shakespearean-trained actor to deal with, this is what Thor has been all of his life. Of course he's this pompous, arrogant bastard that speaks in this fucking weird, antiquated way.
Mm-hmm.
And
you
formal
like,
and all that.
Yeah, and then you throw him into the real world. And then you get the second one where now he's after Avengers 1. He's acclimated to the society. And then, boom, he's fully accepted the sardonic nature of his character, and he's just an asshole.
Yeah, it's incredible. Thor Ragnarok is a fucking achievement.
My 2-second one is... Thor, son of Odin, how awesome to have you in my clutches.
Surtur,
son of a bitch, you're still alive.
Just so good.
The whole, like, hang on, it's not me, I swear, it's just the chain.
Like, they did comedy really well. Like, people bitch and whine about quips in Marvel movies, and there's, like, hardly any in this. It's literally just the characters.
It's situational humor.
Yeah, they're not, like, cracking jokes.
Yeah.
They're just their character reacting to the situation.
Strongest Avenger.
Yeah.
Damn you, Stark. Point Break.
Yeah.
It's just, I feel like I know you. I feel like I know you too. Like,
so
just.
Good.
But then that, like, so there's all the comedy, and then the other side, there's the epic story behind Hela.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And
no,
like
Hela's
you see
really well.
The flashback from the Valkyries and
that
stuff.
That was rad.
Right.
I saw it in 3D, and that scene was pretty. That was like the only good 3D scene.
It's probably pretty.
Scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then like her shattering Thor's hammer, and it sets up Infinity War and all this stuff. You're just like. This is a great fucking film. And then on top of that, all of that, you got Korg.
Oh, yeah. Korg's amazing.
Bye, new Doug.
Bye, new Doug.
Exactly. Oh, Meek's dead.
I stepped on him.
The only thing that I think is undeserved is the, like,
His arms and knives. I like him.
I think the only thing that's undeserved, and Tyler brought it up when we first talked about Thor Ragnarok, was that Executioner's epic moment is pretty well undeserved. He hops out and is, like, firing his fucking guns at the sea of dead bodies and stuff.
I mean, I think it was... It was in line with a lot of the movie, and then it's nods to a lot of other old great shit.
But the shake weight joke was fucking funny.
Yeah, it's fucking good. And so that movie was just incredible. And
honorable mentions, Kingsman.
Oh yeah,
it was really
we just watched that recently.
What'd you guys think?
It was pretty good, but it was so ridiculous.
Yeah,
I think that's the point of it, though.
But the first one wasn't that over the top.
I think the first one was better by far. This isn't bad. Just the first one is so fucking good.
What do you think of the Elton John jokes?
I like
Wednesday. Wednesday.
I just love that his main line was
"Fuck you, bitch."
Yeah.
Yeah, that I did like Elton John's.
He shows up in the bowling alley. Friend.
Yeah. It, like, a lot of it was really good. It's just a little over the top.
I'm telling you, I like Julianne Moore as like a supervillain.
They should have had her do a lot more.
Sure.
Like, that's kind of, I guess that's kind of where my biggest problem with the movie is that it's set up like an old school James Bond kind of spy movie with like GoldenEye gadgets.
It's set up like, it's set up like not a Sean Connery one. It's set up like a Pierce Brosnan.
It's like live action Archer.
Actually, that's a little bit better way to put it. Yeah, although The Man from U.N.C.L.E. is technically Archer, but yeah.
I need to see that.
It's sort of with Henry Cavill and
Army Hammer,
yeah. I think
Spider-Man.
Let's move on. Yeah, Spider-Man, great villain. I think actually,
yeah,
good villain in that movie.
The one that I almost nominated Guardians to, because that movie is fucking quality.
I
like
the Yondu
and Guardians were both incredible.
Like, yeah, I agree. Yondu's story in that really gets me. Especially at the very end, like, where he's not... He may have been your daddy, but it wasn't your father. And I was like, fuck, man. Or he may have been your father, but it wasn't your daddy.
Yeah.
Like, fucking tear my heart out, man. And then, you know, his burial is played over... the fuck is Yusuf? I can't remember his name right now. It's Father and Son by... I can't remember the name of the guy.
Is that the Neil Young one?
No.
Cat Stevens.
Yes, it's the Cat Stevens songs, Father and Son. I'm just like, damn, that's hard.
I'm thinking Old Man. That's a Neil Young song I'm thinking of.
Plus, you know, you got The Chain and Brandy. The soundtrack is great.
Wham Bam by Silver.
Right.
Oh, my God, I love that song.
Fucking, what's his name? Sean Gunn is just like, he's eating soup. Baby, we've been alone.
So good.
And then the breakout scene with Baby Groot and Rocket and Yondu just destroying the other Ravagers and stuff.
Yeah. The title card scene may not have been as good as the original Guardians.
Redbone, yeah.
Because when the title shows up in that, it perfectly sets a tone for like that movie and this one.
Yeah.
But... The opening title
Mr. Blue Sky.
When it freezes and it's
Groot.
It's still really damn good. We also had Wonder Woman and Justice League. Justice League doesn't deserve any kind of...
Just the goofy Flash run.
That movie sucked. Wonder Woman, though...
It had some moments.
It had some moments. You know? I have some good moments taking shits. I still don't like... I'm not going to parade the shit around and go, this is awesome, guys. Look what I made. I may have enjoyed part of it, but no, bad.
There are definitely times when, that is a satisfying turd that I just laid. That was awesome.
Wonder Woman was just satisfying, though.
And Wonder Woman was good, actually. Wonder Woman was by far the best DC movie we've had out of this new...
But it doesn't break any molds,
no,
right?
It's just a good, solid movie.
The Wonder Woman... You could almost make the Wonder Woman character a male. And it would almost fit. If there wasn't the Steve Trevor character, it would almost be the same thing. Like Fish Out of Water, Captain America story.
Yeah.
But through the eyes of Wonder
Woman. Gay.
It was just a good
instead
good
of an Isle of Woman, it's an Isle of Gay.
But solid movie fitting the formula, I think, is right.
Yeah.
What else do we have for movies?
God, I mean, that's about all that pops to mind. Movie-wise, as, things where I'm like, hell yeah.
Yeah, that's about it.
Oh, if we could nominate a movie that's not on this list, it'd definitely be Baby Driver.
I haven't seen that.
Oh,
I
haven't seen it yet fucking either. God, that's the best movie this year. And then, oh, I want one more before we go. Batman and Bill came out this year.
Oh, that's right.
Batman and Bill is a fucking great documentary. I think everybody that's ever been a fan of Batman should take a look at that one. Before we get into our last few, let's do our final brew category, and that would be
also before we get into our last one. Let's also do the Lifetime Achievement Award.
No. We'll do the brews first, and then we'll get into that. Okay.
All right.
Biggest surprise in brew is what we're going for on this one, and I'm definitely calling it at the Iron Horse Cozier Sweater Imperial Oatmeal Molasses Stout. Aged on hard maple.
That one was really good.
That sounds pretty tasty.
That one was so good that I brought it to our 13th age game.
Oh, did you?
2 weeks ago, yeah. Oh, I brought it to our 13th age game. And, I had it in the mason jar glasses that they have there. It's one of those beers that you're like, fuck, this is tasty, but God, I gotta take it slow.
Oh, yeah.
Tyler?
Bodhisattva in a can. See? I was very surprised that they did that. You did mention earlier, like, they don't really can, like, anything.
Now they can three of theirs. Yeah, Rogers, now, Lucille, and Bodhisattva.
Kind of a surprise, and Bodhisattva was a beer that I really enjoyed. I didn't think I would like Bodhisattva, but it did.
For my birthday, Lisa and Mark took me to the brewery, and they took me around Seattle and stuff, and I got to watch the canning process on Bodhisattva.
Nice.
I saw it from, stacks and stacks and stacks of empty cans.
Yeah.
And then I got to see them loaded in through they have this automated canning process, like how it's made. And it's just so fucking cool, dude. And then, you know, aside from it, they have the testing process to make sure that every can has, you know, the right amount of pressure, the right amount of oxygen content, all that stuff. It's so interesting to watch. And I met Manny.
Oh, very nice.
Good fucking guy.
It's got a good beer.
What's your biggest surprise?
I am surprised by nothing.
Surprising no one. Adam has nothing for this category. Yep.
I didn't drink a lot of beer. Listen, I'm on a podcast about comics and beer, and I don't do either of those.
We all have our shortcomings. Well, we do have one more award to hand out, but it's sort of our Razzie.
Yeah, it's called, in honor of Chris, it's called the Chrissy Poo's Poo-Poo Pile.
Did I name that last year?
No, Chris named it.
Chris?
Yeah.
Okay.
So Tyler and I have the same piece of shit. Yeah. It's Iron Fist.
It's Iron Fist.
Which was pretty bad.
Adam, I like your nomination too.
I went with Dead Man Number 1 by DC Comics this year.
It's actually by Neil Adams.
It is hot garbage.
Yeah, Reddit is pretty critical of it too. They say it's like, you know, imagine a 3-year-old wrote the comic.
It's like a fucking fever dream, yeah, dude. Yeah,
it's terrible.
It's so convoluted and backwards and like... The entire time even though it's a number one and it's a brand new story with the Dead Man getting his first title in a while, you feel like you've missed like 12 issues.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And so the entire time you're like, what the fuck is going on? And then there's a huge MacGuffin that makes no sense. That has to do with, it's just not, it's not good.
You know, there was a couple Dead Man comics that are limited that came out this year. There was one that was a 3-issue one. It was like every 3 months.
Oh,
that's
right.
Not this one.
No, this is the ongoing.
That one was well handled. I think it was more like a manga style or like graphic novel style than this one.
See, and I think Dead Man was one of those characters that could lend himself better than that into a continual ongoing, especially because he's a little bit less known. But this is the Rebirth Dead Man number one ongoing, not for very much longer.
Yeah. Tyler? Yeah. Why is Iron Fist a piece of crap?
Oh,
all of it.
You know how sometimes...
Not all of it. Colleen Wing is a great character.
Colleen's good. You know how sometimes people, a bunch of fucking spurge lords on the internet, bitch and whine and moan that a comic book movie, they shit all over the lore or the origin or whatever. But it's not a problem because it's good.
Iron Man was originally in Vietnam,
they kind of...
Or Thor is actually Donald Blake on Earth,
they
or something like
that.
They
didn't put
that
in there. Yeah, big old fucking deal. The thing is, Iron Fist shits all over the lore of Iron Fist and then can't even have the goddamn common decency to be decent. It's just bad.
All of that vitriol that Tyler spoke is true.
No, 100%. It almost, Iron Fist almost got it, but I was just so upset with Dead Man that I had to give it to Dead Man. But it's a show about kung fu, magical kung fu, and you see almost no magical kung fu.
He uses the fist like four times.
And it's some kind of thing he has to recharge.
And which is kind of...
counterintuitive?
Kind of a thing.
It's kind of, he's got to recharge his chi, but like...
No, but that's,
no, he doesn't,
that's
though.
That's the thing. His iron fist is not from his own chi.
Oh, it's from Shu Lao's.
The infinite wellspring of Shu Lao the Undying's golden chi. There's no reason for him to like...
It shouldn't be physically taxing to him.
No, you're right.
I mean,
you're right.
Maybe you could argue a little bit.
Well, yeah, everybody gets tired.
If he's been in like 2 hours of fights, maybe have a little trouble because he's having trouble focusing. But it's not like he does it once and then he needs to recharge the fist.
It's not like in the Defenders where they can tie him up and he can't use the fist because he's in the constrictor tie.
Yeah, they just got it totally wrong. And then I think the biggest travesty is that they were trying to rush it for Defenders.
Yeah.
And because of that, we got shitty fights.
So I think it falls at a couple different other aspects too. One, comic books at their heart are absolutely like soap opera dramas.
Oh yeah, yeah.
There's
stories.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, they're like, I'm watching my stories, yeah, but
like Tyler Riverdale.
Yeah, I love stories, man. Stories are great.
Yeah. But like, it's accepted because these people are extraordinary, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the problem I have with Iron Fist is that it does not give you this, these people are extraordinary. It just gives you, this is a soap opera drama where, like, we spend three episodes. Yeah, we still spend three episodes where Danny is basically emasculated and impotent. But the focus of it is, like, the problems over at Rand Enterprises because, like, my father doesn't love me, but he loves my sister, and my sister is, like, a milquetoast piece of shit until she's wronged. And then when she's wronged, like, I actually become a... I'm talking about Meacham.
Yeah.
Like, I actually become a big badass and kill my father, but then my father comes back because he made this underhanded deal with the hand. Also, the hand is a thing. It's a soap opera drama, dude. It sucks. I'm actually alive, son.
Yeah, like, they took it a little far.
I like that.
The Meachums
David
are the best
Wenham,
part of it. Is the worst part of the series. Is the Meachums are the best part.
Yeah, I like David Wenham. I think he's a great actor. I really liked
him.
He's
the dad, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's Faramir in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, yeah, he was good. He acted that part well.
I fucking love him. He sucks in this fucking series.
I don't blame him, though. Like, I still think he acted the role as well as one could, but...
Kabuto?
The younger
terrible
Meacham
villain.
Was probably the best character.
The brother?
The brother.
Yeah.
He was probably
the
best character in the
And
show.
I fucking hated him, too.
I hated him, but he was one of those characters that...
You like
I
to hate?
I don't hate him because, like, I think they did the character no justice.
An indecence, yeah.
It's just, like, I hate him as a character, but I enjoy watching him.
Sure.
Yeah. No, and I will agree with you there 100%, Nihiler, because he was the most fun to watch.
Yeah, his fucking descent. Oh,
so good. Danny's girlfriend does more sweet fighting than Danny does.
Yeah, Colleen Wing.
Yeah, by like a lot.
Yeah, and I fucking hate her villain, Kabuto. I think he's a piece of shit.
Yeah. Got a real rapey vibe from that dude the entire show.
Do you know, okay, so his...
Way too calm about everything.
pretty sure I mentioned
he
this one.
Kids?
No. Well, yeah. Pretty sure I mentioned this when the story came out, but do you guys remember the second Transformers movie?
Yeah.
Sam goes to college.
Yeah.
His roommate is Kabuto. It's like, so at one point they're in the fucking Museum of Flight in D.C. where they've retired the SR-71 and shit.
Oh,
and he comes out of the bathroom with his pants around his ankles. And he's like, dude, there's no toilet paper in there. Thumper Dumper, man. This is like Cat 5.
Yeah.
You know my favorite complaint I've ever heard about a movie fucking ever?
What is it?
You guys remember Greg McEnany?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Greg told me, among other reasons, he didn't like Transformers.
Among
2,
other things.
But my favorite movie complaint I've ever heard of is they go out of the Museum of Flight. And then they go into the...
Graveyard.
The graveyard.
Yeah. But that's in a different state.
Exactly. It's nowhere near it.
Yeah.
And the movie portrays it as if it's right there.
Like out back. It's in the back.
Like it's out back of the museum. Yeah.
And like, I didn't know this. So watching the movie, I was like, okay, that's plausible. I don't know what these places are.
Oh, yeah,
are.
No.
They're across the country.
We get out of that shit and immediately he's just like, he rattles it off. I was like... That's totally legit. a legit complaint.
That airplane graveyard is in like the middle of the fucking desert somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like Arizona or New Mexico or something like that. Yeah, but they're still Steve that we used to work with, that, you know, he told me that, like, within a couple days, all of those planes can be operational again.
Oh, really? I thought they were a lot more broken down than that.
No. They were retired. They were never, like, decommissioned or anything like that.
I see what
you're
saying. Yeah.
So, like, if we go to war and those are untouched, if someone doesn't handle them, like, they can be, like, we're talking, like, Zeros from, not Zeros, those are Japanese, but, like, Mustangs from, like, World War II, those can still be put into use.
Really? Yeah. I did not know that.
Having friends in the Air Force. So, we got some Lifetime Achievement Awards, Comics Brews, 5th Annual Brewsies. We're running long, but this is why.
Yeah.
We've been going so long that it's time to give out some longevity awards. And for this one, I think
let's do
comics first, because we can't talk about quality comics without judging it against what's been going on since before comics started.
We've got to have a baseline. Our baseline is Saga.
Saga gets our Lifetime Achievement Award for the best comic in recent memory.
This comic just, issue 48 came out last month.
It was a fucking doozy.
Yeah, like, we're 5 years into this.
Four.
Five. It skips months. We already had this argument. We already did this a couple weeks ago. We're 5 years into Saga, and it still is throwing new shit at us. It's still making us fall in love with characters that we initially may have, like, hated. It's still showing new facets.
Petrichor's my favorite new character.
Yeah, Petrichor's fucking amazing. But I like Prince Robot.
Prince Robot, yeah, that's what I was just going to say, right? Or, like, even, you know, like, so we've been following Marco and Lana since issue one.
Mm-hmm.
And they are still on issue 48 showing me the new facets of their characters, new reasons to love them. Also, Lana's got some of the best fucking comebacks in comics ever. Was that sexy Lana? No, don't listen to sexy Lana. She's crazy.
Yeah. All the characters are incredible. The art is amazing.
Art's amazing.
This comic, because I think we mention every now and then that Saga just wins everything, but there's a reason. It is the best thing being published right now, like, bar none.
Like, imagine if we were back... Like, we were around back when, like, Why the Last Man was coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, on a weekly or monthly basis. Like, we'd probably give it to that.
Probably. Or I don't know if Why was as good as Saga, but it's still pretty fucking
It's fucking way up there, right? Like, because it subverts all of your expectations about what this comic would be.
A good comparison.
Like, of Saga?
In another industry, like movies or television or books.
Television would probably be like...
Like, what's a...
What's a universally accepted good television show?
I mean, I can think of plenty that are mostly universally accepted.
Breaking Bad, for example, is probably like universally, aside from like those weird outliers that are John or people that haven't seen it yet.
What about Seinfeld?
Or Friends?
It's accepted widely as funny.
You know,
or
I like Friends as a better comparison.
Because it goes across countries.
It was across countries and it was more successful. It'd be like if Friends was airing now. And
Game of Thrones.
Yeah, there you go.
But they're late. Last couple seasons, there've been some issues.
Yeah, but it's still.
Well, here's what I'm getting.
Or Walking Dead.
You're talking about hit on every.
Here's my comparison. It'd be like if Friends was airing now, and we were a TV podcast. We'd probably talk about like S.H.I.E.L.D. or if you get to comedy. Yeah, I mean, Josh, you'd be talking about Big Bang Theory and all that shit.
No, I wouldn't.
Oh, maybe you wouldn't.
Why you?
We don't know.
Wow.
I'm just spitballing.
Like, you've insulted Adam several times tonight, but I thought, like, that hurt a lot.
It'd be like that thing we just got to acknowledge, like, okay, this is actually just better than all the shit we're talking about now. And if we just talked about the one thing, it'd be boring. But that's what Saga is. We can't just talk about Saga, except for this episode.
I really fucking hate you.
I know. That's fine.
All right, so yeah, Saga gets our Lifetime Achievement Award. If we make it to the 6th Annual Brewsie Award, someone else is going to get our Lifetime Achievement Award. Probably going to be Invincible, because it was around before and ended after.
Yeah, and I really do want to go back through and read that whole damn thing.
Should go to Sandman, because it keeps being brought back up. It's so good.
So does Watchmen.
Sandman just fucking is the best.
Ever. Yeah, but Sandman's better than Watchmen.
It's arguable. No, it's not arguable.
All
right, so last...
Watchmen might be more influential.
Oh,
No,
depends on what you define as influential, because like the Sandman shapes all stories.
It started the trend of like deconstructing superheroes.
Oh, gritty superhero comics.
Yeah, like okay. That's why I think it's more influential. I'll but I think Sandman is leagues better.
All right, so we have to give our individual lifetime achievement awards for brews, and Adam and I have the same one. No matter where I go to at a bar, as long as it's in the Pacific Northwest, if they have this beer on hand, I am there. It's Manny's.
Yep, I'm the same way. Manny's is my go-to beer. What I do hate, though, is when I go to a bar and Manny's isn't drank a lot, so then I get sludge from the hose in my beer.
A little bit, right? Like, you know? Manny's is like, oh, yeah, we've got that. Haven't been bought in years.
Yeah,
but, yeah,
it's the same keg we've been sitting on for 6 months. We've never flushed the hose, so...
I think as long as Manny's is available at a bar, I can at least, like, know that I've got, like, a safe spot here.
Yeah.
Your home.
Exactly. But those are available. Manny's is available at most bars from... Washington, Oregon, Idaho, and California. I think it's all in that area.
It's a respectable choice.
My bartender, one of the several bartenders that know me as a regular.
You fucking lush.
Don't even, most of the time, say hello at first. They just, Manny's?
Dude,
question mark?
Did I fucking tell you? Last week when you guys were playing 13th Age, I went to the inn. I just started saying hi to people at the bar. And I turn around, and there's a beer sitting in front of me.
And it's...
You know what they fucking poured for me?
A Manny's.
They poured a Manny's.
Yeah.
Because you always order the goddamn Manny's.
Hey, Adam.
Because it's better than Mac and Jack's.
Cheers, bro.
Cheers.
Lifetime Achievement Award for brews is, I think you guys can tell, it's Mac and Jack's, but this is Mac and Jack's The Company. I'm going to even put that in parentheses in the notes here. Because not only have they crafted the finest beer ever drank by any man's lips, Mac and Jack's African Amber, they have also made what has been my absolute favorite barrel-aged beer. And I drink a shitload of those. You know this.
Cascadian Dark Ale, barrel-aged.
Yep, the Cascadian Dark. It, oak-aged Cascadian Dark Ale. Fucking amazing. They had it on tap for a while at a couple different places.
But it sold so well, they bottled it.
Yeah.
That's really how that happened.
It was actually the one beer that I think I can actually, I consciously realized, because I had them bottled and on tap really close together. Not like days apart, but like a couple weeks apart. Where the on tap was really, really, really goddamn good. Probably the better version of the two. But in the bottle, I could tell a bit of the difference. And, I mean, while still good, it's like, it is a different kind of flavor.
It's wild how that happens, right?
Yeah, it's...
You can also tell, like, if a beer was stored on the shelf and wasn't refrigerated versus it's been refrigerated since it was shipped to them.
Yeah.
You can tell the difference in that beer, too. It's fucking weird, isn't it?
So, I'm giving it to Mac and Jack's, the company, for being a Northwest favorite above Manny's. And, yeah.
Was it this year you learned the story of this, too?
I will always be on the side of Mac and Jack's because I think that African Amber is better than a Manny's.
Right, but you learned the story of Mac and Jack's and Manny's this year.
Well, I would consider it more the story of Manny's.
Sure.
But
sure.
Yes, I did.
You piece of shit is what... Well,
reason
folks,
he ain't working there anymore. That's all I'm going to say.
Folks... I definitely appreciate you guys making it through all of this. Adam, I appreciate you staying awake for more than 80% of it.
I was awake the whole damn time.
Before we leave you this year...
I fall asleep.
Before we leave you this year, I want to make sure that everybody is on the same page with me in that when they filmed the reboot of the Star Trek series, that it was done in the... in the Budweiser brewing facility. Tyler, I think this is a new fact that you learned
this
year.
We're making this really hard to edit out.
But I think as long as we're all on the same page on that one.
I really thought it was common knowledge.
But then we found out January this year that he didn't know this.
Yeah.
So, Tyler, if there was one thing you learned from this year, I hope that you know that when they filmed the 2009 Star Trek with J.J. Abrams, you know, Zachary Quinto, Chris Pine, Zoe Saldana, that they did so using the brewing facility at Budweiser to portray the engine room.
Oh, funny. I didn't know that.
Really? Well, I'm glad.
I never heard that before.
Everybody learns something new every year. And on that note, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to say thank you so much from all of us at Comics Brew, and we'll see you guys in 2018.
Merry thank you Christmas. For listening. I've been Tyler.
Happy Hooligans.
I'm Josh.
I'm Adam.